Welcome to today's episode of the Mentoring Minute podcast. Today we have our featured guest, Doug Tweddle with Foster Park Brokers. Doug is the go-to insurance guy for the mentoring movement in Alberta. We've been very fortunate to have Doug helping us out with some of these hairy issues around board liability insurance, director's insurance, mentor program insurance, cyber liability, and much more. If you ever think about what your mentoring program needs when you operate your program, when you go to a school or a workplace, when you're working with volunteers, when you're thinking about the obligations to you, your staff, your board, your community, today's webinar is for you. We've taken the audio of the webinar and put it together in the podcast, which you have in front of you. But if you want to see the video, the PowerPoint, the slides, and get a little more in depth in the information, we encourage you to go to albertamentors.ca and look on our blog. We've posted the video as part of our ongoing commitment to professional development. You can also find it on our YouTube channel. So please like, listen, share, subscribe, and have these tough conversations with your board and your program. Make sure that you're covered. Make sure that you are following all the best practices that we outline in the Start a Community-Based Mentoring Program Toolkit. And please give a listen to what Doug has to share with you today.
We are a unique organization in that we're employee-owned. So unlike a lot of brokerages and insurance providers, we are not owned or operated by an insurance company. And as a result, we have a tremendous amount of independence. And in that independence, I work for a firm that has a dedicated not-for-profit team. And I'm a member of that. As Michael alluded to, I've been working with mentoring organizations, big, small, and everything in between. And indeed do support the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Canada through their insurance product. It's great that you've joined us here today, and I'm particularly delighted to see that 100% of you are insured, so it's wonderful. Pulling out the insurance webinar, I know this is the one you've all been waiting for since Christmas of last year, because this is the exciting one, but insurance isn't really that wonderful a subject until you need it, and that is when you face a moment in your professional lives where you think to yourself, do we or don't we have the right coverage? And my goal today is to take what is a sort of a high-flying look at your basics around insurance and try to drill down a little further and have some discussions around maybe taking a look at your insurance really from the perspective of what you're doing every day in your mentoring programs. We're going to do an agenda where we're going to talk about an overview of the not-for-profit board of directors and their risks and responsibilities. GL or general liability coverage, your D&O coverage. We're going to talk about some key pieces of the D&O. We're going to talk about cyber liability, and that one we're going to spend some time on. And another that may or may not have hit your radar, which is the errors and omissions liability. And then we'll take questions, as Michael indicated, and I am wide open to anything that might come up. So don't hesitate. The more far-fetched, the happier I am in a way of question. To begin with, if you are a not-for-profit mentoring organization, you will be registered with the Societies Act of Alberta. And that means your bylaws, your vision, what your goals are all registered with the province. And that's what declares you or defines you as a not-for-profit organization. And the benefits of that are that some of you will go out and get registered for charitable giving, some of you won't. But it does give you a special and unique place in terms of the governance of your organization in Alberta. One of the things that I think that really needs to be understood is that the basis of your insurance policy is your director and officer policy. And the reason for that being the base of the program is it is actually the board members who are running the operation. Now, they may be a governance board, and they may be a group of people who meet 8 or 10 times a year. They provide ability to find the funding. They maybe help with the vision and the overall sort of goals. But the day-to-day stuff will probably be handled by you, your teams, and all those around you. But ultimately, in the eyes of the law, it is the board members who are running the organization. They are the boss. And that means it's the bedrock, or the D&O is the bedrock of an insurance program. As volunteers, I think it's important to recognize that people come on and they give time, energy, money. Often they meet at night. They'll go to a board retreat through the weekend. And in all of that, without a really, really robust D&O policy in place, they're at risk. And when I say they're at risk, under the Societies Act, a board member, no matter what their role, is financially responsible for the health and well-being of the organization in terms of its fiduciary duty. And that goes so far as that in the event that it is determined that a board and a board member have made a decision that in turn caused there to be financial harm to the organization, your organization, those board members, their partners, their wives, their husbands, their children, their family, all of their financial assets are at risk. That's their home or their farm, their business, a registered education plan, an RRSP. And this is a very misunderstood piece, is that people say, well, I'm just volunteering. But no, as a volunteer on a board, you have accepted the responsibility. And this is laid out under the Societies Act, that you're going to look after the financials of an organization. So I like to start with the D&O, because I think it's vital that we take a good long look at that. If you have a board member or board chair who is least interested in talking about the insurance, and you'd like to bring it to their attention, I think the quickest and simplest way is to say, did you know your house is at risk? It's worked for me, and I would highly advise it if you need a little bit of a prod to talk about this once we're finished the webinar. We're going to talk about general liability coverage to begin with. This is secondary to the D&O, and all of you probably have hit your brokers up for a certificate of insurance. And this is when you're working in a school, maybe you're doing an event in a mall, perhaps that you've got a field trip planned, and your third party provider, that's the mall, the school, or the field trip people, say, hey, we need a certificate. And we need to be added as an additional insured, and we need to know that it's in place. And this is what we're providing you coverage for. This is the general liability. This is really what protects you against any third party suing you. And they can sue you for a variety of different reasons. They can sue you for comprehensive losses. It's broken into five pieces, and these are the five fundamentals. You'll never find a commercial general liability policy without these five. So you have bodily injury and property damage, you got personal advertising injury, you got medical payments, you got tenants' legal liability, and you have non-owned automobile liability. And that one we're going to touch on too. So what we'll do is we'll break this down into pieces. I'm going to share some thoughts around types of claims with an eye that maybe we can get some thoughts going about where you maybe think, hey, I got this, no problem, I got a CGL. But truly, the question of the day is, do you have a CGL? And will it respond? And are you doing enough to mitigate the risk around what could be a potential claim? So the piece to understand is that property damage and bodily injury are the fundamental parts that will respond. So this is how I like to explain it. So you've got a fundraiser, and you've gone out and you've rented the school gym. You've provided a certificate of insurance. You've got a ladder brought in by a volunteer. You've got a banner that says mentoring program fundraiser. You've got an opportunity to hang that banner high up into the ceiling of the gym, because that would be really wonderful and would look great, and you put a spotlight on it. But unbeknownst to you, the ladder is faulty, and your volunteer knows it. But your volunteer is so keen and so excited to help that they just thought, I should replace the ladder, but I'm not gonna. So they put the ladder up, they have half the banner attached, they move the ladder across the gym, they're going to do the second half of it, and the ladder collapses. They grab the banner, they swing across the hall like Tarzan, the banner pulls down the ceiling of the gym, and they hit the janitorial staff that are helping to clean up behind you. Ultimately, what we've got is potential property damage. That would be the ceiling. Bodily injury, that's the janitorial staff who are all bruised, one with a broken arm and one with a lacerated head. And we have a volunteer collapsed on the floor with a broken ladder in pieces. This is where you are liable. And this is where you need to know that you have a commercial general liability policy that will respond. The property damage, which is the ceiling, is your responsibility, because the ladder wasn't 100% in good shape. It was brought on site by a volunteer, but the volunteer is operating on behalf of you, the mentoring programmer, and as a result, you're liable. The bodily injury, is the result of that person slamming into the janitorial staff. And that in turn is what will respond in the commercial general liability. So one of the pieces is understanding that mitigating bodily injury or mitigating property damage has a lot to do with supervision. It's a simple thing. It's supervision. It's supervising who's coming, where are they, what are they doing, how are they doing it. And although you may think to yourself, well, we're just a small organization of perhaps half a dozen people, and we're doing our mentoring program in a safe school, and we've got this going on, and we've got that going on. The moment you assume the space, you take over the space, it's your operation. Therefore, it's your liability. So one of the pieces that we know happens is that the confidence with which you walk into schools and maybe municipality places and offices and stuff is that nobody actually takes a look around to see, is it safe? Have we got everything under control? Because I think that's not my responsibility. But ultimately, it might be your responsibility. And that's a really important piece to understand with a CGL policy. The other part of it that is of interest, because you do a lot of work with webinars and you do things online, it's really important to understand personal and advertising injury. And they sound kind of like formally, but really what they are is personal has everything to do with your reputation, a person's character, their reputation, and maybe even their position in a community or a position in the society or a position on the board. And it gets to that kind of level or distinction when you're discussing personal liability. The advertising piece is where you infringe on somebody else's information. So you may say, Alberta Mentoring Partnership provided me with this insurance webinar, and it was the lousiest webinar I ever spent an hour of my life attending. And then you take it and you throw that webinar out onto your social media sites and say, do not go to AMP and do not listen to Doug because this webinar is crappy. And as a result, you have slandered Doug and you've slandered AMP. And believe me, Doug may come back at you through a lawyer. And that's why you have to need and make sure that you have advertising injury. I know those sound kind of a little bit out there, but believe me, I've seen it and they're not. It happens and it happens frequently. When people's feelings get hurt, they meant to do well, they maybe didn't achieve that goal, but they meant it, they will come back. No matter whether you're a not-for-profit, small, mid, or large-sized, they will come back. Other three pieces, medical payments, tenants' legal liability, and our non-owned automobile. So medical payments is what we kind of refer to as the cushion of the general liability policy. So let's shoot back to our gym. We've got the banner down, we've got the ceiling down, we have the janitorial staff harmed, we've got a volunteer harmed, and we recognize that we've got some ambulance costs and we need some physio and we might need a chiropractor. We have to replace a pair of spectacles or glasses. The medical payment side of a policy will pay those bits and pieces, not the big cost of a liability claim, but they assist in those little expenses that arise during a claim. And most often what will happen is that by doing that, a lot of those that have been hurt or harmed will come back and they'll say, you know what, you guys looked after me. I'm okay, I got new glasses, kind of needed them anyway. My bruise is not that bad. You know what, I love this organization. You paid my ambulance bill, I'm okay. And it goes away and it just solves itself. And people will sign off and you'll be done. And that is often used as a way to circumvent, because that's not the right word. That's often used as a way to ease a claim. And very, very often, well-meaning and well-intentioned people will say, yep, I'm whole again, and I'm moving on. The next piece, got to talk about this, because this is really, really vital. It's tenants' legal liability. And this is when you are being sued for the fact that you lease or rent a location. And my suspicion is a lot of you are in schools or maybe in buildings where someone has kindly offered you a mentoring space, an affordable rent or in-kind donation. And as a result, you are using someone else's owned property. But that doesn't mean you do not have a liability exposure and a responsibility. Because what it means is that you are responsible in the insurance world in the event that a claim occurs in that leased space that is your fault to replace the construction or repair of that leased space, even though your building owner has their own insurance. How it works is building owner's insurance comes in, they take a look at the loss, they say, okay, 40% of the building burned. They determine that it had to do with the lease space to your mentor program. It's determined that somebody lit a lavender candle while finishing their year end in order to relax. They succeeded in getting the QuickBooks to balance. They went home, they failed to blow the candle out, the candle caused a fire, and 40% of the building is damaged. Within that 40%, 10% of that is the leased area for the mentoring program. Your insurance is going to be asked by the building's insurer to pay to replace your office area, your 10%. So what is really vital is that you ask your landlords, those that you lease space from, what is the value of this building for replacement cost? And then you make certain that if you have 10%, you at least have that as a minimum under your tenant's legal liability. If you go and you lease a large ballroom for an event, if you lease a school for an event, your number is going to be much, much higher. The requirement's going to be higher. Hotels, schools, civic auditoriums, those kinds of things. We see often organizations where they may have like $250,000 worth of tenants' legal liability. But truthfully, if you had to rebuild the school gym, you're going to need a whole lot more money than that in your policy. So that's TLL, or tenants' legal liability. And finally, the last piece is your non-owned automobile. You do not have an automobile policy with this. Has nothing to do with that. This is in the event that your volunteer or your staff are out doing a chore or a task on behalf of your mentoring program. So Doug gets in his car because he's going to go and get Michael and Corey a coffee. And I'm here doing my webinar for you guys, and therefore I am kind of working on behalf of AMP. I'm a volunteer. So I go and I T-bone somebody on my way to get the coffee. In the investigation of this accident, and it's not a good accident, it's determined that I am in fact doing a chore for AMP. I'm doing a task. Okay, so it's determined that I have $250,000 worth of third-party auto liability on my policy. It's the least amount you get to carry in Alberta, and lots of people are doing it. The economy being what it has been, lots of people drop their third-party liability below $2 million, many, many of them. And as a result, the claim, which was a bad one, I T-boned somebody. I caused somebody to be paralyzed. That claim's going to hit $6 million. That claim's going to hit $3 million. That claim's going to hit $1 million. Well, Doug's auto policy is going to respond first, and there's $250,000 there. Where does the remainder of the claim money come from? And this is a big risk. This is a potential risk. Potentially, it could come from your mentoring program's policy. Because I'm volunteering, I'm doing work on behalf of the mentoring program, and there isn't enough money to satisfy the claim, so I'm coming back and suing the mentoring program for non-owned automobile liability. You don't own it, you're not operating it, but somehow or other, it's affiliated to you. And that's the fundamental fifth part of a commercial general liability. We're going to talk a lot more about the D&O, or the directors and officers. So as I said, volunteering is a vital part of a board's role. We talked about the fact that their fiduciary responsibility, it's number one. It's important. Sometimes boards misunderstand that is really truly their only primary role. Yep, they do committees. Yep, they help find other things. But from the eyes of the government and the Societies Act, bottom line, no matter what size of the organization, it could be a $5,000 a year budget or a $5 million a year budget, it's the boards who is held ultimately responsible. And a director and officer policy, properly understood and properly underwritten, will respond. Okay. This is our number one claim that we see in not-for-profit sector right now, is under the D&O. And it's there for two reasons. One, rising financial mismanagement by a board. And two, interestingly enough, is wrongful dismissal of paid employees. And this is what will respond in that circumstance. Boards have three big pieces that they have to follow. One is duty of care, one is duty of loyalty, and one is duty of obedience. And I've been doing not-for-profit insurance for a long time, and I know that on occasion, the makeup of a board will transition, it will change, and that you will end up with boards where sometimes they don't understand that they need to be loyal, or sometimes the idea of obedience gets a little bit outside the sandbox, or the duty of care gets misunderstood. Duty of care quickly becomes I will do versus I am going to help you do. And that's a challenge. And anybody who runs a not-for-profit, I understand where you're coming from. And I got things I can help you with if that's something that comes up. But the piece here is that a board has, a director has three basic duties. And if they meet all these duties and if they keep the organization clean with the Canada Revenue Agency, they're following all the laws, if the funds are being managed well, if everybody's working in a really great way, then it's good. It's working great. What happens with a DNO is when that one of these three pieces or something arises, then this is where the director and officer policy will respond. Within it, there are basically a trigger, and the trigger is a wrongful act. It can be negligence, it can be an error or a mistake, it can be as simple as a misstatement or a misleading statement where you forget or omit, or where you breach the duty of the board. Remember, duty is care and it's obedience, loyalty. So what can happen, and I've seen it happen, I saw one recently, where organization, mentoring, in fact, wound down operations, and they did so for a couple of reasons. I think the steam was out of the engine. I think that they were out of money, and they had had a board that, for a number of years, tried so, so hard, but just didn't reach the goal of making it sustainable. In and amongst the wind down, what arose was a claim. And the claim came from a stakeholder. And the stakeholder was a local organization with deep pockets that had written a check for specific programming. And when they wound down, they asked for their money back. They had every right, the stakeholder had every right to ask for their money back. But unfortunately, the board had spent the money on other things. And as a result, the board didn't have the funds to give back to the stakeholder. The interesting piece is that the board, when they wound down, decided not to renew the director and officer policy, which they had been advised to do. And as a result, each board member had to write a check for just under $2,000 a piece to make right with the stakeholder. There were about eight stakeholders lined up on this particular organization, and they managed to get seven of them to agree to sort of be, like, basically bygones be bygones. But ultimately what transpired is that these board members out of their own pockets had to write a check for just under $2,000 each. And that is because they mismanaged the funds. We have seen where a board will lose track of the goal or the vision of the organization and gets going in a different direction entirely. And when that happens, there's usually a lot of hurt feelings and pain, and you get some things that can transpire and you get errors made. And again, what can happen is that the stakeholders will come in and they'll say, listen, we're funding you for this, but you're doing that. And that is not what we're funding you for. We'd like our money back. So I can give you a really, really fun example. It's got nothing to do with mentoring, but there was a town, it's in Saskatchewan, and they wanted to build a brand new skating rink. So the board of the not-for-profit got going and they found three big, big providers. So federal government, provincial government, municipal government, each going to go in. All that the not-for-profit had to do was raise 25% of the funds required. They had a year to do so, and they didn't get to their goal, so they didn't achieve it. Okay, but then in turn, they took what was a large amount of money, and they spent it. They spent it on equipment, and they spent it on all sorts of cool skating sessions and camps and training and et cetera. And then somebody at the federal, and then somebody at the provincial, and then somebody at the municipal levels all just said, hey, wait a minute, there's supposed to be a new skating rink. Where is it? Oh, you're not building it. We'd like our money back, please. $750,000. $750,000 owed to the different levels of government, and it had all been spent. In this case, thank fortune, there was a director and officer policy to respond, because that's what it will do. If you've done things well, or even if you haven't, a good DNO policy will respond. It will provide defense costs. It will provide support if there's been an allegation of wrongful doing or act, in this case, not building a skating rink. And it will look after things for your board, as long as they are following the bylaws or the constitution of the organization. So I'm going to touch on that real quickly. If you do nothing else after this webinar, but maybe go dig out your insurance policy, please dig out your bylaws. I bet you may have trouble finding them, actually, and that's not surprising. Happens a lot in my business. But I would recommend that you have a really good long look at your bylaws and send them to your board and say, hey, when's the last time we reviewed these? Do our bylaws still fit our operations? Do they still fit our goals and our vision? Because really, really often what we find is the bylaws were built 12 years ago. They were filed at the Societies Act, and believe me, they're filed there, and they lay out why you're a not-for-profit. And then you change gears at year number 7, and then you realize that you haven't touched your bylaws at year number 12. Well, your bylaws have to keep up with what you're doing, and then they have to go to the Societies Act, and they need to be re-registered, and you need to keep those up to speed. And so it's really, really vital that you figure out where your bylaws are, and that annually you review them so that you have a really good feel for where you're going. Because without current bylaws matching your current director and officer policy, you may have an insurance policy that might not trigger. And then you're going to be like that mentoring board where you're going to have to write a check out of your own pocket. And nobody wants that to happen, because that's not a good place to be. There's three different sides to a board policy. Side A is your director and officer. This is specifically insures individual directors and board members on the policy. Your corporate reimbursement is when we're covering the organization as a whole, and it indemnifies the DNO or directors and officers against claims. And then you have entity coverage, and this is what responds to the entity. That's your actual organization. Okay. What's really important is that the number one claim in Alberta in not-for-profit outside of theft claims is wrongful dismissal. And anytime someone claims that they've been wrongfully dismissed, it is the director and officer policy that responds. So we're going to circle back to the fact that everybody's working for the board. So you may be an executive director, you may have an awesome HR system and policies and procedures in place, you may have a wicked good volunteer program in place, great, great employee volunteer handbook, everything's going really well, and Doug comes to volunteer. And Doug, bless his heart, is hopeless and absolutely cannot figure out how to make the coffee or manage the program. What you thought was a really, really talented person just isn't fitting in. And that's okay. But in not fitting in, you let Doug go as a volunteer. Well, that doesn't sit well with Doug. And Doug actually has a cousin who's a lawyer. And the lawyer at Sunday night dinner says, hey, let's file a claim. Let's sue them for $10,000 because your reputation's hurt, you're hurt, and they didn't follow the right processes as set out in the volunteer handbook. So as a result, your DNO policy will respond to the volunteer claim, not just employees. It also works for employees too. So I'm gonna tell you a good one. This is an organization that supports those with persons with developmental disabilities. It's a 24-hour care situation. And you've got a supervisor and you have a caregiver in a home for clients, and it's 11 p.m. and one of the clients is having a tough moment. And that tough moment escalates till all four clients are struggling to find their way back to bed and get peaceful. Supervisor's trying to manage it. Caregiver is on their phone. This is a true life one. Texting. Because it's nighttime and normally everybody's asleep, and this is usually what we can do. And in her frustration, supervisor turns to caregiver and says, "Just get out." Result is the caregiver sues organization for constructed and wrongful dismissal the next morning, and the settlement was $35,000. And the reason is that by the standards of today's courts, that caregiver had been summarily fired without there being any HR processes in place. Now, I'm a reasonable man. I lose my temper sometimes too, and I fully support and understand the supervisor's position. But in today's world, others will come, and they will come quickly. So that is why having a very strong DNO is vital. So just a few more examples. One of the ones that I do want to talk about is discrimination and membership complaints. So as a not-for-profit, one of the pieces that can transpire is that in the day-to-day energy of trying to get the mentoring to where it needs to get to, and let's be clear, that's got to happen. I know that by mentoring young men and boys, particularly right now, we're seeing huge changes for their futures, and same obviously with young women and girls. But one of the things is that in trying to do all of that, it's really vital that you keep up with things like your HR policies and your volunteer policies, and that you're making certain that you have up-to-date references to today's legislations, because somebody will one day, it's not a matter of when, it's a matter or if, pardon me, it is a matter of when, somebody that you just don't want to bring on as a volunteer because they're not a fit, they're a dug, is going to make a complaint, and they're going to complain that they've been discriminated against. And again, that's where the DNO will resolve itself, but it's something that I do caution you about. And obviously the DNO will respond when somebody has embezzled a whole bunch of money, but nobody caught it. And we do see that. Believe me, we see that a lot. So obviously, I'm a big fan of the DNO policies. I think, as I said, the bedrock of a really secure program and something that I'd go for. Okay, you are working with people and you have a lot of information that you don't know you have. You have a birth date, you have maybe a SIN number, you might have a medical number or Alberta Healthcare Card number. You have information about why they need mentoring. You have information about maybe family backgrounds. You have information regarding how the mentoring is going. And all of that, believe me, is sitting in a phone, it's sitting on a laptop, and it's sitting in a desktop. And yep, you've got Bitdefender, and yep, you've got everything up to date, and you do all of your due diligence in trying to manage your IT, but you have no money for an IT department, and we totally get that. Cyber is the number one threat in the country today. About 2 weeks ago, they announced that $14 billion, that's with a B, dollars of Canadian business and not-for-profit money has been spent in the last 12 months managing IT and cyber claims and cyber liability. And it is something that I think absolutely you must have a look at and make certain you've got something on your policy, minimum something. But let's be clear. Under Canada's anti-spam legislation, under PIPA, that's the Privacy Information Protection Act of Alberta, and as of November 1st, it's going to be PIPEDA, which is the federal standard. Alberta's been leading the pack on this for a long time. You are going to have to disclose any kind of leak, breach, or difficulty that has affected potentially the information that you have on your sites. And the average cost to manage each file is $190 a month. So to do the math, take your staff. You have staff information. You'll have a SIN number. You might have information regarding their banking if you're using an online banking system or payroll system, and you have a birth date. That's sufficient for a criminal to take the identity of your staff. So if you take, let's just round it up. Let's take it, $200 a month. There's three of them, that's six. That's $7,200 a year that your organization has to spend, legislatively has to spend over the next 12 months to manage any kind of breach that affects your system. Multiply that by the number of students and clients that you mentor and that information, and just do the math. Take 200 and multiply by how many files you have in your system, and that will tell you what you potentially must have to pay in order to look after a cyber breach. Doesn't even talk about hackers or ransom. So I can tell you about a mentoring organization here in Alberta, and they were gearing up for an event, and they were in their offices, and they are busy trying to print off all the documents that they've got on the desktop for the evening event. So these are the, you know, raffle tickets and, you know, bar tickets and all that other stuff. And somebody says, hey, where did that icon go? And somebody else says, hey, where does that icon go? And they're watching their system disappear in front of them. They had the wherewithal, unfortunately, were able to get their IT person in there right away, and he was able to stall it. But in the event, they lost about a third of their data. And it was backed up. So great, it did come back, but they were breached. And some of that data was very, very, very sensitive. They had no coverage under a cyber liability policy to respond. So as a result, they had to pay out of pocket thousands and thousands of dollars. So I want you to go, and once you dust off the insurance policy, I want you to look at the cyber liability piece. If you're on a package, you may find that you've got some. It might read $25,000 or might read $50,000 limit. Then go back and do your math. See if that's sufficient. We're just going to let this work its way through. These are the different kinds of coverages you get. Probably the number one thing that we're here about are extortion threats. That's ransom. And the number one cost we know is absolutely any kind of breach of privacy, because it's super, super, super expensive. Network security, that kind of stuff. And I'm going to be clear, a cyber liability policy is primarily affordable for most organizations today, but it's something to keep in mind. Okay, I'm going to finish with errors and omissions. This may or may not be applicable to you, because what you want to do is know and figure out if you need it. And don't decide yourselves. I would recommend that you phone your broker, or you speak with me, and we chat about what you're doing and how you're doing it, and do you have the right coverage? Because here's the thing. As a mentoring organization, you are taking on the role as an expert. You are going to be the one providing the coaching, the guidance, the educating, the support for your clients. And that puts you in a position of authority, and it puts you in a position of expert. I sit here today as an insurance specialist and provider, and so I have the protection of errors and omissions liability, because I may omit something that I needed to tell you, or I may make an error, and therefore you may face financial harm. And this is where an error or an omission liability policy responds. So I've seen them arise when support workers have been providing support to individuals regarding employment. They assist with the resume. They assist with the practice for the interview. They assist with the get to the interview. They do all of this sort of stuff. They work and work and work and work and work, and nobody gets a job at the end of the day. And what we have seen is people come back and they sue the organization because they didn't get the job, and they sue them under an error and omission liability because they claim that all the teaching, all the coaching, all the assistance was in error, that they were negligent and that they didn't do the right job, and that's why they don't have an employment situation, and that is why they are suing. And so errors and omissions I like to touch on, because if you've got even one member of your staff or a volunteer who is in any way offering professional expert advice, it's something that you need to take a look at and need to discover whether you require it or not. So, you know, that's where we're going to kind of tidy it up. So there are real risks. There's real exposures in insurance. I know that you often, it's the last thing you want to talk about, because I get it. I love insurance. I absolutely do. But not everybody does. But one of the things is to maintain the health of your organization, to support your staff, to look after your volunteers, to protect yourselves and your clients. I think it's really, really vital that you take a good, long, hard look at your insurance policy and make sure you've got everything in there that you require. One of the things I'm going to talk to you about is that you may have a wonderful relationship with your current broker, and that is excellent. So what you can do is you can ask them to come in, and I would encourage you to come in and say to them, I want to go through this, and I really want to go through this, and do it. Or if you have, if you dig out your insurance policy and nobody's touched it for a few years and you don't even know who to call, really, you just send a check every year, I am here. And what I can offer you, and I'm delighted to do it because AMP are friends of mine, and Big Brothers Big Sisters of Canada are totally good friends of mine, is I'll do your audit for you. And there's no strings attached, they're free. And what you do is you connect. Information is going to be there to how to reach me, or you can contact Michael or Corey here at AMP, and they'll get us hooked up. And what we'll do is we'll just take a look at. We'll do an under the hood like you do your vehicle, and say, hey, this is what you're doing. This is what you got. This is the gaps. These are the things we see. So it's out there for you to consider, and definitely one of the things that we're happy to help you with. So that's Insurance 101. I ask that you forward any questions. I think Michael's going to take it over here, and we'll go from there.
Awesome. So you can type in any questions you have right now in the chat box. First of all, thank you, Doug. That was a lot of information. And I think most of us who are listening probably feel a little bit of an elevated pulse right now. I think I imagine you would say the antidote is to make sure that you're covered.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know what it is? It's you gotta just open up the door. Pull it out, dust it off, and if you don't want to, reach out to somebody to do it for you, because you guys are good at mentoring, and I'm good at insurance, and that's how it should be.
Another question I had is, we're seeing more and more that one of the often mentoring will take place where a mentor will meet a mentee in a school or in a community center or in a library, or it'll be off-site, so to speak. And we're even seeing now that some folks are bringing mentees into their workplace. So an office may host young people for a mentoring opportunity. I was going to ask you about that. If you're going to somebody else's workplace, how you should think about your program's operations.
So that's awesome. What a great question. That reverts back to your commercial general liability and your supervision and looking around. Yep, you're coming into the office and you're doing the mentoring there. It doesn't mean you don't have responsibility for the safety and well-being of your client while in that office. You still have some liability. You still have some risk exposure. Because if you note that the office you're using is too cold or too hot, or if there are cables strung around, that's not right. And you need to stop and you need to say, hey, you know what? I know we want to be here, but we got to pause. So in the library, absolutely the same as a school or an office.
So of course, it's not rude to ask a partner hey, you know, I want to make sure my program is safe. Or do you carry insurance? What should specifically though, if it's Michael's mentors going over to Corey's cars, what should I be asking for from Corey's cars to make sure that I know my kids will be covered?
You need to ask for a certificate of insurance from Corey's cars. So here's the thing, how you frame it is vital. So all you say is, hey, Corey, I'm so excited you're going to accept this. We're looking forward to getting over there. One of the things I got to do as part of my due diligence for the board and for the well-being of all is I need you to send us a certificate of insurance that shows that Corey's Cars has liability insurance And let me be clear, I hope that you will ask for a minimum of $2 million. That is the fundamental base that I'll work with. The schools are asking for it, governments are asking for it, but just ask for a certificate of insurance and then just file it and keep it on file. And that way, if Corey's invites you back next year, just before you go back, you get to say, hey, Corey, your insurance would have changed. Can you send me a new certificate of insurance?
That's a great way of putting it. I also really liked your idea about, as a board of directors, we should often, for our mentoring programs, just, you know, annually we have an audited financial statements. Mm-hmm. We also, that's probably a good time to put, you know, item number one, audited financial statements, item number two, proposed budget, item number three, review of insurance coverage, something to that effect.
Number three, review bylaws. Number four, review insurance. Don't forget your bylaws.
Yeah, great point. So a question, when you're working with your clients, obviously maybe part of your job is obviously this insurance piece, but part of it is also ensuring good functioning of organizations. And what are some of your favorite professional development opportunities or learnings for board members or staff? Where do you recommend they go to sharpen the saw?
All right, so a couple of places. Government of Alberta, they've got some whiz people out there who will come out and they will do a governance weekend with the board, and they will assist boards in sharpening their governance tools and understanding their role and responsibilities as a board member. And that is through the Ministry of Human Services. Fantastic. You will also find that you can go to Revenue Canada, and they've got some terrific stuff as well. Also though, you know, like we have a lot of stuff available through Foster Park that we're happy to share, no client or no client, doesn't matter, where we can send you some what we call risk insights that chat about things like, and they're general, and they're hopefully in human speak, where it talks about E&O, talks about director and officer, talks about, you know, working alone safety checklists, those kinds of things. So it's all those kinds of stuff.
That's awesome. Well, we realize we're 5 minutes to the top of the hour and want to be respectful of Doug's time, but thank you very much for the presentation. It was excellent. And to those of you listening, one of the takeaways that I had from Doug is it's important to have insurance, it's important to have coverage, but it's also important to have really good and effective practices in your program. And one way, as the Alberta Mentoring Partnership, that we try and support you in that is through our community-based mentoring toolkit. So if you scroll down on this page, albertamentors.ca/start, you'll see that we have lots of information here about how to screen, how to match, how to make sure your mentors are trained, how to go through and make sure you have a budget, define your program, all that work that Doug talked about insurance and staffing and HR policies. You know, it's interesting. I've seen a few mentoring organizations sink in the water, and the reason has been not because anything was actually wrong between the mentor and the mentee relationship, but because of operational organizational concerns with the board of directors, with the staff, etc. It was the HR pitfalls that ended up causing the program to be unsuccessful, not actually the mentors or the volunteers, etc. So we want to help you as much as possible. So if you tune into these resources, if you tune into our webinars, if you have other questions or comments, we want to help you with the nuts and bolts of your organization. It's never too late to tweak and refine and change. And whether you've been mentoring for 1 year or 100 years, we want to help you improve that. So thank you very much again, Doug. This information is fantastic. We'll be sending it out in the show notes to all of you. And we encourage you, if you get questions in future, to get in touch with Doug. His information will be provided in the notes. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Please visit www.albertamentors.ca to see our resources, explore our content, and learn more about how you can expand and enhance your mentoring program. Please subscribe to our podcast on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcast, and please take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you can watch our webinars and take more of our great content back to your mentoring program. If you have a guest or a topic you would like covered on our show, please shoot us an email. We want to hear your mentoring challenges and celebrate your big wins. Reach out to us at mentor.support@albertamentors.ca.